since I've been out till 2:45. Would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
This is Dr. Rob Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age? And the answer to that question is a lot. And my listeners, especially the older adults and caregivers out there, shouldn't settle for less. I have in the studio today Mrs. Carol Wolf and Dr. Reverend James Lewis III to talk about spirituality and aging. Mrs. Wolf is the Associate Spiritual Director of the St. Joseph Center for Spirituality and a member of UB's Spirituality and Healthcare Committee. She also has a regular column in After 50 magazine called Faith in Action. Reverend Lewis is the pastor of the Bishop Germain Wesley Logan Memorial AME Zion Church and Director of Pastoral Care at Erie County Medical Center. Welcome, Carol. Welcome, Reverend Lewis.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit more about yourselves and your professional and personal missions?
Well, as far as my professional experience, I was in healthcare administration for 30-plus years, have been retired for 5 years, and have really enjoyed putting together workshops, retreats, and working with many of the aging people. When I heard this song, part of the line was, when you are 64.
Right.
Well, I have 1 year to go.
One. You didn't have to divulge that. That wasn't a prerequisite for coming on the show.
But life is good. And
that's good.
There is a lot that people can expect.
Well, I know you're doing a lot of good things, and you do it with enthusiasm and a true interest in the people you're trying to reach. And you, Reverend Lewis.
Well, thank you for the invitation to be here, along with my co-host, Carol Wolf, for our TV show, Challenge for the 21st Century. And you've appeared on our show, and we've been blessed to work with people in all stages of life over the Grace Manor Healthcare Facility, as well as the Skilled Nursing Facility at the Erie County Medical Center, and the Erie County Home and Infirmary, Sheehan Hospital. God has just blessed me to be able to work with so many different people in so many different stages of their life. And then I happened to hold a hat of a caretaker. My mother and father. My father is 84, my mother is 79, going on 16 and 17. And it's a challenge.
Well, the word spirituality can mean different things to different people. A related question is the difference between spirituality and religiosity, or spirituality and religion. I spoke with Rabbi Ronald Kopelman, a rabbi of my synagogue, Temple Beth-El, earlier today about this, and we're going to hear him now.
I think that in order to talk about aging and spirituality, we need to talk about two things, spirituality and religiosity. From a Jewish standpoint, spirituality is a quest to somehow become closer to God or to get to know God a little bit better. Religiosity, on the other hand, is something we would call piety or observance of rituals.
Now, how do you see that changing or different or the same as people get older?
If we consider spirituality to be a quest or seeking is most often associated with youth, while piety is more of a doing and is often associated with age. What's interesting, however, is that in Judaism, Kabbalah, which is the Jewish mystic or spiritual tradition, is described as a discipline that one shouldn't even undertake until age 40.
Why don't we talk about that, spirituality versus religion, and let's also talk about people, whether people can be spiritual and not necessarily even affiliate with a formal religion. Carol?
Well, I have discovered through the years that what Rabbi talked about is that in the aging process, people don't really start to think about those things until they're in their 40s, going on to their 50s. They may have a background of a religion, but they become more spiritual and more seeking. I believe that the spiritual nature crosses all denominations and unifies us, where oftentimes the religious nature or denomination has a tendency to separate us.
Most of my experience in trying to separate religiosity from spirituality comes in the form of maybe working with people that are coming out of the highlands of affliction, that have been addicted to substances or different things, and we try to explain religiosity as anything you do religiously. And so we found that people take drugs and drink religiously. So now we need to move them to the next level. And the rabbi hit it on the head when he said that it's an action. And sometimes we can engage in religiosity just by going through the actions and not even realizing why we're going through the motions. Some people can sit, stand, cross themselves, and go through all these changes and still be hell on wheels.
The parallel between doing alcohol and drugs religiously and a path to improvement and cure, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, actually does take religious approach. I mean, you're right that in older adults and the elderly, alcoholism in particular is a problem.
It certainly would make sense to work with teenagers to explain what spirituality is all about and have them be conscious of seeking that purpose in their life.
Yeah, I can't agree more. And actually, it's ironic. I had this discussion with my daughter just the other day. It was yesterday. She was done with Sunday school, and I picked her up from there, and she told me that she's ready for her bat mitzvah, which is over 2 years away. She began to recite a prayer in Hebrew that she will need to know. And I said, Lauren, do you know what the words mean? And she said, no, not really. And I said, well, something very useful that you might want to do is, as you learn the prayer, also learn what it means.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Imagine a whole segment of our population that went to church and didn't know what the priest was saying.
That's right. And I think that's true for a lot of churches. Kids don't really have the opportunity to discover what things mean.
And it's hard enough even when it's in English.
Yes,
imagine what it was like when they did services in Latin.
In Latin, and still to this day, Jewish congregations, specifically mostly conservative and Orthodox, have their much of the service in Hebrew.
Yeah.
And how many people understand the Hebrew that they're saying? Even if they know how to read it, do they really understand the words?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, how do things change from youth to middle age to older age? And our focus, of course, in this show is older age. So we want to see how things change over the years as people grow into old age. I found in researching for the show that King Solomon, in his youth, wrote the Song of Songs. In his maturity, the more philosophical Proverbs. And then in his older age, Ecclesiastes, from which, Reverend Lewis, I'm going to ask you to read an excerpt now.
Appreciate your vigor in the days of your youth, before those days of sorrow come, and those years arrive of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Before sun and light and moon and stars grow dark, and the clouds come back again after the rain. When the guards of the house become shaky, and the men of valor are bent, and the maids that grind grown few are idle, and the ladies that peer through the windows grow dim, and the doors to the street are shut, with the noise of the hand mill growing fainter, and the song of the bird growing feebler, and all the strains of music dying down. When one is afraid of heights, and there is terror on the road, before the silver cord snaps, and the golden bowl crashes, the jar is shattered at the spring, and the jug is smashed at the cistern, and the dust returns to the ground as it was, and the life breath returns to God who bestowed it.
Seems to me a somewhat pessimistic and perhaps realistic outlook at growing old, especially from the perspective of the time in which it was written. Any comments on that and how this kind of outlook and from what you know about King Solomon?
He starts off with an amazing view from hindsight. So appreciate your vigor in the days of your youth before those days of sorrow come and those years arrive of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. The things I used to do, it's not that I don't do them, I can't do them anymore. So what he's saying is get the most out of life while you can. And we find a lot of people that have grown to an older age that regret mistakes that they made in their youth, yet they don't find itching ears to hear them to try to help somebody along the way, because the majority of people don't want to hear from older folks. They want to try to find their own way of doing things as it was with that generation. So as we move through the different paradigm shifts of life on a personal basis, things become less important to us that we thought were really important.
And usually the material things.
Absolutely. He who has the most toys wins. At some point in your life, you realize that that's foolishness.
You don't take your toys with you.
You don't take them.
Well, you mentioned about having children listen to older people.
Right.
And learn from the wisdom of the perspective of a life lived. What's happened now? Do we not do that?
Where we used to value adults and the older people and keep them around, now we've got nursing homes that are just full of our older Americans, older people in our family. We're so busy with our life. The mother's working, the father's working, the children's working. Nobody has time to be a care provider for our older parents that took care of us. What I say is the math is all messed up. One mother can have seven children, but seven children can't take care of one mother.
We all have something that we want to leave to our children. And sometimes it's patience, sometimes it's a loving personality, a feistiness, whatever. To be able to take the time, as you say, people don't have the time, but be intentional about the time to spend with the children and the grandchildren and tell the stories.
And often the visits to nursing homes, let's say, are without clear purpose. And if you go with a project in mind,
it
also
won't be tedious.
It won't be tedious. You won't be at a loss for words.
My grandmother passed away the month before she would have turned 100. She was in a nursing home for about 20 years. When we visit, she always talked about the old people in the home. And her mind was great. Her body was just breaking down. And when we would say to her, Grandma, you're older than everyone here, she'd say, I tried that once. It wasn't my bag.
One thing I read about a little while ago is leaving an ethical will, not just a will of what you're going to give to who, but to write down, either do it on an audio tape or write down your ethical will, what you hope your legacy is going to leave behind. Well, be a good person to help others like my father did, my mother did, that sort of thing.
Well, we encourage everyone to write your own story. At the hospital, we give them a book, Be Prepared. And it's a journal that the patient themselves can write down. They don't have to reveal it to anybody until after they're gone. They can have it sealed and put away somewhere. But sometimes in writing your own story, you find out more about yourself than you even remember yourself. When we get down to the essence of all of the things that we deal with, it's about healing. They carried a man to Jesus, tore a hole in the roof and let him down. And they were waiting for Jesus to lay his hand on him and do something miraculous. And he spoke and he said, my friend, thy sins are forgiven. And inside of all of the things that was going on with him, he needed forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
He needed closure. And after that, he was all right. He was healed. And you'd be surprised how many people are in some of the conditions they're in because they are carrying a weight they should have let go years ago.
Yes. When Jesus is at the pool in Bethsaida, and the man who had been there going every day for 38 years, waiting to go in the pool to be healed. And Jesus says to him, do you want to be healed?
On that story, he had to ask him, do you want to be healed? Because there were ramifications that came with the healing.
Oh, yeah.
Because for 38 years, he found a way to work around the system and have people bring him there and feed him and give him money and take care of him. Now, after 38 years, do you want to change?
Yeah.
And we have some people that have been sick a long time and they've gotten used to their sickness. They have become mentally lame as well as physically lame.
Yep.
And
definitely,
they do not want that process to change.
Now let me play a little bit more of my discussion with Rabbi Kopelman, and then we'll talk a little bit more about that and go on from there.
Really starts begging the question of who am I, what am I, and what is my place in the world. These are spiritual questions. And once you get focused on that, I think it begins that process of I'm not perfect, I'm not immortal, I'm not everything that I used to think I was when I was 17. There's a famous story about the woman on the subway in New York whose kids are just raising all kinds of noise and running all over the bus, and she's not doing anything about it until a gruff old man goes up to her and says, can't you control those kids? And she just looks at him and apologizes and says, I'm sorry, I'm coming from my father's funeral.
What do you have to say about that story?
We have no idea what is going on inside of them, what struggles they're going through, what hurts, And so we can't be judgmental until we understand.
Now, Reverend James, you're head of pastoral care at Erie County Medical Center. What do you see in terms of how doctors and doctors in training and other health professionals deal with spiritual issues?
A lot of the doctors have become so steeped in science that they had lost their spiritual bearing, but it's getting better. And Joint Commission has established certain standards for emotional care. And if they don't say spirituality, they say emotional care. And that's what they mean as to how are you dealing with the emotional attitude and the situation of this particular patient.
Over the past 10, 15 years, there are many more studies that have been documented that prayer does make a tremendous difference.
Especially bringing it back to the context of geriatric care, where there aren't as many specifically curative things to do for someone.
Well, we have to emphasize the fact that as we grow older, it's a part of life, and that death is not our enemy, but our friend.
So let's listen to the last part of my talk with Rabbi Kopelman, which talks about the fear of dying.
One last question. Do you find many of your older congregants are afraid of death?
I wouldn't doubt that they are, but I don't hear it expressed that way, as they sense their own mortality, that there's still things needed to be accomplished before that final moment. Mortality is the price we pay for being human, that the world would be a vastly different place if we didn't have to go through that. And we're told in the Bible anyways that this is the best of all possible worlds, that God saw everything that was created, and behold, it was all very good.
Even if you don't necessarily believe in the afterlife as
right.
an entity in and of itself, you do live on through the people that you met and worked with. And, you know, part of the reason I'm doing this radio show, I just felt compelled to try and get the word out to more people than I could reach through my day-to-day activities as being a doctor.
Absolutely. And Dr. Starr, I commend you because you are a new wave, a new age of physician. You are embracing spirituality and allowing it to influence not only the lives of your patients, but the lives of those that you come in contact with. Shelf Prof says that we're ageless body and a timeless mind. And so no matter what age you are, you should still make goals.
Well, thank you so much, Carol, Reverend James, for being here today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
It was a great discussion. This is Dr. Rob Stahl. I'll see you next week.
Will you still be sending me a Valentine?